I always ask every year, how many of you lost your mother in the past year? How many? Number. I honor all of you. My mother's still alive. I lost my father about 20 years ago. But it's part of life's transition. We all know that. It's always interesting talking about mothers or fathers, for that matter, to a large audience like this, a diverse audience, because we've got so many different relationships and histories with our parents. Not only that, a lot of us are parents ourselves now. I'm not, but I know many of you are. And we finally understand what our mother meant when she said, just wait until you've got your own kids, you'll see. You know, once again, Mom was right. For some of us, I know, because I know so many of you, for some of you, your parents are still your best friends. At the other extreme, there are people in this room who have not spoken to one or the other of their parents in years. I also know there are some of you who did not know your biological mother or father for a number of reasons, so you have adoptive parents who chose you, and then, as we all know, some of us, our parents have gone on to the next plane of existence where we look forward to seeing them one day, or not, depending on the relationship. But whatever your particular situation happens to be, it's still very interesting how powerful our emotions can be when we think about the people who are responsible for our birth. So for that reason, today, Mother's Day, is the day when we should at least recognize and hopefully celebrate the most powerful relationship in our life, the relationship with the woman from whose body our body came. Now, if you think about it, it's a little funny that the universe has been set up in such a way that we can't remember the events that occurred on the day of our birth, at least not consciously, even though it was arguably the most important day of our life. Of course, the day of our birth was not the actual beginning of our relationship with our mother. That began 9 months or so before, but it was certainly a major transition for both of us. That was the time when we changed from being a part of her body into being a part of her life. And only those of you who have given birth yourselves can appreciate the magic of that moment. In fact, the only other moment of our life that even comes close to that in importance, probably because it's also something we observe but don't completely understand, is the moment some years later when we make our transition from this life to the next one, and we do that one all by ourselves. I think that's why, even though it may not feel as powerful as it did to us in the beginning, our relationship with our mother in the very first few days was the most intimate, the most vulnerable, the most supportive, the most dependent, and the most mutually loving relationship we'll ever have. That is how we all started out. So for better or worse, we're never going to be more intimately connected to another human being than we were to our mother in those first few days, no matter how much we love someone now. And this is true whether our mother is with us or whether she's no longer with us. It's true even if our connection to our mother has been strained or severed for some reason. So let's talk about why, on a larger scale, this is important for us to understand, not only for us personally, but for the world as a whole. You see, as spiritual seekers, which people who come to a place like this usually are, people who are interested in understanding the nature of God, our nature, the nature of the world, we think a lot about what our true nature is. And by that I mean, if we were made in the image and likeness of God, metaphysically, spiritually speaking, what does that say about us as these physically formed spiritual beings in what appears to be a material world? And even more importantly, what does it say about the power and the process that created us? How is it that these two aspects of our being, the spiritual part and the physical part, actually ended up showing up here as one single thing through this process that we call childbirth? And what does that mean in terms of the way we should be living, in terms of working, playing, eating, sleeping, loving, being, all the things that we call life? That's what we want to know as spiritual seekers. You see, as immortal spiritual beings, which is what we are, which means that who and what we are now existed long before this life in some way, shape, or form, and that it's going to last in some way, shape, or form afterwards, if that that's the truth of our being. And if each one of us is an individual expression of the one life, the one love, the one intelligence, the one power that we call God, then the transitions that we make from the life before to this one, and then from this one to the next one, also have to be part of some intelligent process, because the power that created us is obviously pretty smart. Now, we may not know exactly how all this stuff works together on a cosmic level, but we do know that it seems to function very, very well. So it only makes sense that there must be a reason for things to work the way that they work. So what we call birth and death may simply be the way that we move from one life to the other, but what is it that each of these processes should be teaching us? What should we be learning from the process of birth and death? Now, when we look at death and dying, there's been a lot of research on that in recent years. We have actually learned to see it as more of a spiritual transformation than just the breakdown of a physical machine. We have learned, scientists, philosophers, psychologists, all of them, that there's much more of a mental, emotional, and spiritual interface with the visible and invisible parts of our body as we move from life to death than we used to think. So now, as a result of what we've learned about death and dying, we can help people to make a peaceful and natural transition into the next experience rather than trying to delay death at all costs. That's what the hospice movement is all about. So in the same way, I think that there's also a lot more that we can learn about the process of coming into this world that might positively affect our relationship to life, not only in our first few years, but all of the way through. For example, many hospitals are now using birthing rooms instead of operating rooms to deliver babies, which is a good change. And more women are using midwives and practicing natural birth even at home. We have several midwives that attend this center. But there's more to changing our perspective about birth than just changing the environment where the actual birth takes place. Because the process of being born is more than just a physical act, it's a strong spiritual act too, both for the parents and for the child. So today, as part of Mother's Day, I want to talk about what more a child's birth can bring into the world from their mother besides just DNA and a lot of things that we have to be in therapy for years, you know, as we go through. I want to talk this morning about the power of love that is born into the world with every single child and the spiritual part that every mother plays in the process. So first of all, let's talk about the fact that human beings, when we show up on this planet, are the most helpless creatures imaginable. And we remain helpless for a few years, number of years after our birth. We can't obtain food for ourselves. We can't find shelter. We can't move without, you know, being carried. We can't communicate with strangers. All we do is lie around and cry. Actually, I know some adults that aren't much better, but that's another story. Yeah. So a human child under the age of 3, let's say, probably could not survive more than a few days on its own in the wild. But what I find even more interesting in that is when the medical researchers tell us that a human child can actually die or suffer permanent mental, emotional, and physical damage simply from lack of love, simply from a lack of emotional attention during the first few months of their life. And we've seen examples of this in recent years in orphanages in places like Russia or China or the Middle East, where children may receive, if they're lucky, food, clothing, and shelter, but very little love or personal attention. And it's very sad when this happens, and it's a problem that we need to deal with as a world community because it affects us all, because the nations of the world may be able to complain about a shortage of things like money and food and resources, but there should never be anything like a shortage of love. There should never be any such thing as a shortage of love, and I'll get back to that in a few minutes. Now, something else I find interesting about the process of us showing up is that we are provided immediately, right there with us, someone who has the innate ability to love and to care for us. This is true about every mother, no matter how difficult her outer circumstances. Every mother who has a child has something inside of her that compels her to care very deeply for this weak and helpless infant who just a few days before was kickboxing her insides and causing her indigestion. So what is it, from a spiritual perspective, that makes her feel that way? It's not anything logical. It's not a survival urge. It isn't even a sense of obligation. What this is love. That's it. It's love in its purest and simplest and most complete form. Now, we could say it's love straight from God. That's how our old Christian traditions would say. But a better way to say it would be, it is the presence of God in her as love, unconditional in quality and unlimited in quantity. Now, the child has done nothing to earn it, obviously. In fact, any mother who was thinking rationally would be a little annoyed at the child and the father after what she just went through for 9 months. And as far as appearances go, the child may not look very attractive to anyone else, but it's beautiful to her. And for the next 18 years or so, her life is no longer her own. But she doesn't care because of the love born through her, brought into the world as her child. Now, this idea of a mother's love isn't a big surprise to any of us. It's been true in every culture for every race throughout history and throughout the world. There are all sorts of mythological stories and legends about mother's love. There's one story I want to share with you this morning, and it comes from South America. There were two tribes who lived in the Andes Mountains in South America. This is a very, very old story, and they had been at war for many, many years. One of the tribes lived high up in the mountains, which was very cold and icy, and the other tribe lived down in the valleys, and they grew their food down there. Well, one day, because they were always at war, the mountain tribe invaded the tribe in the valley. And as they wreaked havoc on the village and they chased all the people away and took everything they could find, when they were leaving, they looked down and there was a child lying by itself on the ground. So they took the child, stole the child, and carried it with them back up the mountain. So when the valley people came back together, they decided that they would avenge their tribe's honor by going back up to the mountain and getting the child back. The problem was they didn't know how to get there. The trails were secret, they were icy, they were steep, lots of cliffs, but they still decided to do it, so they sent a group of their strongest and bravest men who tried for several days to make it up the trails one after the other, but they couldn't seem to do it. So after several days of trying and failing, feeling helpless and hopeless, they started packing the tents and returning to the village in defeat. But as they were getting their stuff together, not knowing what they were going to say to the woman whose child had been stolen, they heard a noise coming down the mountain. And as they looked up, walking down the mountain very carefully on a trail, was the baby's mother with the baby strapped securely to her back. And as the chief went forward to congratulate her, he said, "You know, we tried for days to climb up this mountain. How could you possibly do it when the bravest and strongest men in the village had to turn back?" And the woman smiled, and she shrugged her shoulders, and she said, "It wasn't your baby." And she went on down the mountain into the trail. So that is the power of a love that knows no limits. Now, whether or not we remember it today, because we've all got our different histories with our mother, that is the kind of love that existed for us, every one of us, as we entered into the world. And the beautiful thing about it is, it's a love that is both personal and impersonal. It's personal because every mother knows her own child. She could pick that child out of a nursery of several million people because they've got that kind of a connection. But in another way, the love that we were feeling then is impersonal, which doesn't make it any less real. You see, our mother loved us at birth not just because of who we were or because of our unique personality, but simply because we happened to be the spiritual being who showed up in this tiny, slimy, little yellow, brown, or pink package, okay? Just what came out. Our mother did not look at us and say, "That's not what I ordered," and send us back, though sometimes she may wish she had, you know, at some point in time. She loved the baby who showed up, which just happened to be us. And for the rest of our time together in this life experience, we both know that we are in it together, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, if not always physically. So whether our day-to-day relationship is a good one or whether it's a little bit strained, whether we grow up with our mother or not, she will always be our mother. Now, there are some metaphysical teachings, some spiritual teachings that express the belief that we choose our parents before we're born based on what we need to learn in this lifetime. And there are other teachings that believe that parents actually choose their children before the children shows up based on what the parents need to learn. And maybe it works both ways. We don't really know. But both of these ideas can be extremely interesting, especially when we're discussing the metaphysical implications with our friends of why our mother is driving us crazy. But the bottom line is with this, once we're born, the two of us need to eventually figure out how our ongoing relationship in this life is going to evolve, because it does. Our relationship may start out completely immersed in unconditional love, but that's the only guarantee that it starts out that way. What we do from that point on is going to be up to us. In other words, in the beginning of our life, our mother may have most of the power and responsibility, and at the end of her life, as some of us are finding, we may have most of the power or the responsibility, but in the time in between, in those years in between, whether there are many or just a few, all sorts of things are going to happen both to us and between us. And how we focus on those experiences, whether we focus on the good ones or latch on to the bad ones, as Gwendy was singing about, whether we forgive or whether we heal, that makes all the difference. That's where our mutual ability to choose love or forgiveness comes into the equation. Now, I also want to say, just so no one feels left out, that biological motherhood is not the only imperative. A biological connection is unique, but a true consciousness of motherhood, this love we're talking about, can transcend even the biological situation or any other family situation we have. For example, if our biological mother is unable to take care of us at birth or in our childhood, then life allows for other options. It may be the father, it may be a grandparent, it may be an older brother or sister, whatever it is. But this works out fine because motherhood at the emotional and spiritual level is not limited by things like gender or sexual orientation. All right, so a child can manifest a warm and loving and supportive set of parents of any race or any gender combination with someone who takes them into their heart and provides all of the love that they need. So getting back to our earlier discussion, the only intelligent solution to reducing the number of children in the world who are living without love, which is something we need to do as a society, and even one child is too many, has to be to figure out a way to open our hearts and minds into creating a way where love can get where it needs to be, whether it's in our inner cities or our outer cities or in the refugee camps in the Middle East, some of them that I just saw recently the other day. When we see these children who are suffering, it tears our heart out. So we have to start teaching ourselves through spiritual teachings like this one and teaching our children that bringing a child into the world without bringing the love with it and allowing that love to grow has an effect on us all. Now, how are we going to solve this? There are a lot of different theories. Right now in the New York Times today, there's an editorial where there are 5 different suggested solutions about how to make life better in the world for mothers and children. Whatever it happens to be, once we set our focus on it, I know that eventually somebody will figure out an answer. It may be someone in this room. It may be one of our children up in the youth program, whatever it is. Because as the great philosopher Elbert Hubbard once said, impossible things are simply those that haven't been done before. So that's where we can find a solution. Now, there's an old Arab proverb that says, God cannot be everywhere, so he made mothers. Isn't that sweet? I like that. My mother likes it too, but for different reasons. She thinks she's God. I think that's kind of the thing. The ancient Greeks used to hold a celebration every spring for Rhea, R-H-E-A, who they believe was the mother of all gods. That's where the tradition of Mother's Day began. And history shows us that there's something in all of us that recognizes this importance. So what I'd like you to think about doing today, after you leave, I know a lot of you have plans for brunch or dinner with your mother or with your children, if you happen to be the mother. When you talk to your mother today at brunch, dinner, whatever, whether you call her on the phone, or when you think about her, if she isn't here, I want you to also think about the love that you felt for her and feel for her, past, present, and into the future. And instead of just reciprocating that love back and forth with your mother individually, try to feel that love expanding beyond just the two of you until it surrounds you and the restaurant you're in and the house and the city and the country until eventually it surrounds the world. And don't worry about overdoing it, because love is a very resilient substance. It is infinitely expandable. And this kind of love is so powerful that we can actually latch onto it and bring that love into the world. So start to see your mother and yourself as these two poles of an incandescent light bulb, and the love between you is the filament, and that filament starts to shine until it becomes a light that joins with other lights until the whole world shines. When we start seeing love, not just the love for our mother, which is very unique, but love itself in that way, that's when the world around us will begin to change, not just for mothers and children, but for all the rest of us. And the most wonderful thing is, once we make this shift, once it changes, it will never go back. And that's what I'm waiting to see. This is the truth in your life. Happy Mother's Day to those of you who are mothers and have mothers. And so it is. And so it is. Oh. Thank you. All right. All right. Take a breath or two. Take whatever thoughts came up in your mind about your mother, about your childhood, about your children. Take these thoughts. Let them settle. And recognize that the nature of life is love at its core. Whenever love does not appear to be present, it is simply because we are not looking in the right place. In every relationship that we have with our mother, our father, our children, our spouse, our partner, our friends, every relationship that we have should be based on love. And as we begin to recognize that the love does not come from outside of us, it comes from within us, we allow ourselves to open our heart and let love out. Let the love expand from in us to touch the love that is in those other people in our life. And as we begin to do this, we forgive, we forget, we release, we begin to look forward, building a deeper and richer relationship rather than dwelling on the past, because we recognize that we all make mistakes, we all do the best we can in raising our own children or when our parents raised us. So it's time for all of us to take the spiritual step of shifting our consciousness away from the old, embracing the love that has always been ours, whether we knew it or not, and begin to expand that love into the world. So I invite you now, in the silence of your own heart and mind, in this quiet moment that we're going to share together, focus on your mother, your mother's mother, going all the way back into time, because we all are connected in that way to an eternal chain of mothers going back to the beginning. And also, if you have children, see them through the eyes of a mother's love. Take these few moments for yourself. With gratitude for this awareness and a deep understanding of its sacred significance in our life, we accept this truth as our own. We allow love to exist as the only power in our life, as the foundation of every experience and every relationship. And as we accept the love that we were born with, the love that came through our mother's body and became our own, we allow this same love to go out from us and touch every person we meet. This is our truth. We are grateful for the love that we have been given and grateful for all the opportunities to love that exist for us in the world. We are grateful for being here. We are grateful for the process of life that brought us here. This is our truth. We accept it completely, and we release it into consciousness, knowing that this is the truth and allowing it to go out and expand from us to everywhere around us, everyone we know, everyone we meet. We accept it and we release it, and so it is.